And now, on the African American Athlete Sports Network, it's Express Yourself with hosts T. Ramon and Sko.
Express Yourself!
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalist Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Sko. I'm Tim Turner, along with co-host Roscoe Nance. We have another show tonight that we think is going to be an interesting take on the sports world. We are getting ever so close. I think it's less than, it might be around 10 days before really college football kicks off, and we're going to be intention of that early on top of the show when we have with us Sam Washington, the head coach of North Carolina A&T, one of the outstanding HBCU programs that we've that's out there in America right now. But we got that going on. Week one of the NFL exhibition season is under our belt, and a lot of folks are hopeful. A lot of folks are crying already about their teams. We got folks up there trying to find new old helmets, and Antonio Brown, and then we have all kinds of things going on in the NBA with the release of their new schedule. We got happenings in the SWAC and the MEAC, so there's a lot to cover over the next 60 minutes, and we're going to get right at it in a few. Roscoe, what's going on?
Hey, everything is everything, T. Raymond. Looking forward to the kickoff of the college football season. You mentioned teams crying. Any tears falling in Atlanta?
No, not yet. There's some on other fronts, but we won't go into that just yet. But there's none falling right here. They're on pace to do really well. They have the Jets tomorrow night here at home, so we'll see how that shakes out. The starters have looked good so far, but we'll see. I think they're on a 10-game losing streak.
Same old story. Same old story. Same old song.
Exhibition season doesn't really count.
Well, the regular season doesn't count for some folk either, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There are folks who are already out the box knowing that they have no shot coming in.
Yeah, some folk who aren't out the box who think they have a shot but don't have a shot, they just don't know it.
True enough. But that's okay. Those guys in the marketing department
and you know who I'm talking about.
We won't go down that road, but we will start off with college football, though, because we're excited about that. And this is the best time of the year. The kids, I think everybody had just about move-in day, except for the athletes over the past couple of weeks. Football team's been at practice, working hard right now. A lot of folks got dreams going into this season, and a lot of folks, that's all they got. But there's some people who are legitimate powers in their conferences in the SWAC, MEAC, CIAA, SIAC. But we have with us tonight a coach of one of the powers in all of college football, actually, they're showing against the 1A opponents. Sam Washington with North Carolina A&T. Coach, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Sam, how's it going?
It's going well. Thank you guys for having me. Looking forward to the show tonight.
Yep. Well, thank you for coming on. I know you're busy down there getting the Aggies ready to make another deep run and have another strong showing. And you know, it's quite a track record that you guys have developed there. Going back to back, and I guess it kind of puts you, at the center of attention. Winning it all in your first year on as head coach there. So, what can we expect for an encore in year two?
Hopefully, we'll put a good product on the field. I think we will be very competitive. And, with a little help here and there, we expect to have a good season.
Yeah. Well, you know, you come out of the chute real strong, just the same as you did last year. Last year, you know, you knocked off Jacksonville State. This year you have Elon, you know, another highly regarded FCS program. And talk about, you know, that game and the potential for setting the table for the rest of the season with a strong showing of victory there.
Well, you know, when we got into this thing, you say, you know, to be the best, you have to beat the best. And we felt we wanted to play, you know, a worthy opponent, you know, in and outside of conference. And we definitely have done that. And this is no different. This is a very, you know, good football program, good football team. And they actually in our backyard. We less than 8 miles apart. So it give a little local bragging rights as well. And we expect a lot of fans to come out. They travel well, and you know, so does the Aggies. So we're excited to play them, you know, coming out the gate.
Well, that
well,
I mean,
can you talk about that, how you start out? Because you have two games against in-state teams. You're at Duke on September 7th. The idea is, I know when I was kind of swacking in the old days, Mississippi State and Ole Miss wouldn't play Jackson State, Valley, and Alcorn. But it seems like you guys don't have a problem getting people to play. You are close to home, and there isn't that enmity, I guess, between programs.
No, not at all. Not right now. You know, times have changed, you know, in some regards, not all. But now they do give us an opportunity, you know, to play each other. And one of the things I really, you know, like about that opportunity, you know, a lot of our kids went to high school with a lot of those kids over there. So, you know, they know each other by first name and have some respect for each other and looking forward to competing against each other. So it's a great thing, and it's a win-win. You know, we travel well. From what I understand, the Aggies have bought pretty much every ticket from the 30 to the 30. So I'm sure they're very pleased with that as well.
Well, you just talk about the team and what it's going to look like, you know, this year. You breaking in a new quarterback who is not a new quarterback in Carter. You know, he has some Khalil Carter who has some experience and came in and actually, you know, has won games for you in the past. How different are you going to look this year? Are you going to look any different at all because of that?
Well, I think we'll look somewhat different, not a whole lot. You know, we are able to run our offense, and what we have done here in the near past, recent past, with Lamar, with the exception, Khalil can run the ball. And Lamar wasn't in favor of running the football very much. Where Khalil, you know, he take that challenge, and he does well with it. He's a little stumpy guy, and he's hard to tackle. And I don't know why or how he always seemed to fall forward, you know, to get positive yards. And one of the things I really admire, he protects the football. I think he has very little to no turnovers his whole tenure here. So we're very proud and pleased to have him at the helm. But I tell you what, the competition have been very stiff. And it's not over, to be honest with you. You know, I think Jalen Fowler is really pushing, you know, to get the nod. But you know, as it stands right now, Carter's our guy. He knows the offense, and this football team believe in him. And I think that's what's, you know, the significant difference between the two.
Well, do you think both of them will see considerable time? You think you might
absolutely
kind of alternate them?
Yes, absolutely. I think you'll see, you know, quite a bit of Jalen Fowler, and maybe a little bit of Kingsley, Petty. Transferred from ECU. You may get a glimpse at him as well, you know, depending on how things are going for us. And if we're able to stick to plan, the first three ball games, you'll see quite a bit of, you know, each of those kids.
And you talked about Carter as a runner, but you also have another, you know, quality guy returning in Jermaine Martin, who really had an outstanding season, you know, sharing some of the load last year with our. Let's talk about what you expect from him.
I tell you what, we expect real big things from him, honestly. He has been lighting it up, you know, here in the preseason. The things that he can do is quite remarkable. He's not only a powerful runner, he has the speed, you know, to take it 80 yards. And so he's the coach's dream if you're with him, and he's the coach's nightmare if you're against him. So we're excited to see exactly how well he does. But this summer, I think he put in the work, he put in the time, and he prepared himself for this moment. And we'll see how it turns out.
Well, you mentioned this summer that when kids come back, you know, they're relatively different types of shape. But were you pleased with the shape your team came in this summer coming off of a championship season? Did they look like these guys are just as hungry this year as they were last?
Yes, absolutely. And our motto this year have been and will be, you know, humble but hungry. You know, we understand what we've done, but that don't help us in no way, shape, or form, you know, going forward. So it's about the work that we put in now and the preparation and the effort that we in which we play with. So the past is the past. You know, it's time, you know, to move on. As far as them coming in this summer, we had about 80% of the guys, maybe about 90, you know, to come in to summer two. So they had the opportunity, you know, to get in shape here. And I think that's a big part of it, the bonding and you know, the hard work and those morning workouts and, you know, on the track and running those distance run. And so when we started camp, I felt we was in, you know, pretty good shape. Now, we still had some heat issues. It was extremely hot those first few days, and I think that was the difference. You know, we had been running, you know, in the mornings, and then you move that practice to 4 o'clock. That's a different bird. So, you know, dealing with that heat has been a challenge for us.
Well, you know, defense has long been the hallmark of the Aggies, and that's your area of expertise. How good are you guys going to be defensively this year, especially with, you know, you're going to have Mac McCain, your outstanding DB, returning off, coming back off injury?
Yeah, well, we like where we are. We really do. We have a chance, you know, to be, you know, pretty good defense. But it's about, you know, how well we develop and grow. You know, these first three ball games going to tell a major story. Preparing for a conference play. The depth is decent. Of course, we would like to have more, but the first two teams can play. And it's about the team that made the fewer mistakes and the one that won it most. And I think we'll be up for that challenge.
Well, how is Mac McCain? How has he looked? I know he's gotten a lot of notice, even though he was injured last year. A lot of All-American consideration and the like, free season.
Buckets. Yeah, he has. He has gotten a lot of attention, and rightfully so. The kid is talented, and he has a knack, you know, for the football, and he made plays. His injury, we took it really slow, but I thought he did a yeoman's job in his recovery. Starting before the surgery, you know, we got on it and got after it before the surgery, you know, to get those muscles in a good place for the surgery. So when he came out of surgery, you know, he didn't have far to go for the recovery. And I thought he did a very good job with that. I think it was Monday workout. He came up to me and whispered in my ear. He said, "Coach, I still got my feet." So that was good to hear. And just watching him, you know, work out and train and doing the agility stuff and changing directions and bursting. He haven't lost a step. He hasn't.
Yeah. Well, you lost the Defensive Player of the Year in the conference, Darryl Johnson, to the NFL. How do you replace him?
You don't. I wish I had him back. But you know what? To be honest, we got some young kids behind him that's very talented. You know, the only thing, they just don't have that game experience. And that's why these first three games are going to be so critical in their development and how much they grow and the confidence that they build, you know, within these first three ball games. I can't say that enough. It's almost like a preseason for us, you know, getting ready for conference play. And we just happen to be playing, you know, three very worthy teams. You know, it's not like it's a lesser opponent that we preparing, you know, with. So I'm excited to see exactly, you know, how well they do. One thing I do know, they can run and they can defeat blocks and they can rush the passer. The rest of it, we'll see as we go.
In those first three games, you're alluding to Elon, Duke, and at Charleston Southern.
Yes, sir.
So it's no, it's a pretty good challenge. So will you be looking more? I think you will be looking more at how you progress than wins and losses in those first three.
Well, you know, we always want to win, and we play to win. We're not going just to show up. So let me make that very clear. But our ultimate goal is to win the conference championship and to get back to the celebration bowl. And for us to do that, we have to go undefeated in the conference, in my mind.
Well, I was looking at how your schedule set up. You had those three games, and then it's an off week, and it seems as if, I guess, you give you a chance to evaluate the pluses and minuses before you start conference play, which I think is you play Dell State. You talk about how you need – is that a game you really need to kick off really hard against Dell in terms
yeah,
of trying
well,
to set the tone for the rest of the conference schedule?
I hope to, you know. But if you look at what they did at the end of the season, they came on like gamebusters. They played some really good football at the end of the season. So we're not taking them lightly at all. We know they're going to come in here, and it's a nationally televised game, and they're going to put their best foot forward, and we're going to have to do the same. But I feel confident, you know, if we do what we do and do it well, we should be okay.
Well, you know, looking around the conference, and I know I can anticipate what you're going to say, but who do you see as the team that's going to really challenge you, the team that you know you really have to look out for that can come on?
Oh, well, let's see. There's Norfolk, there's FAM, there's South Carolina State. It's Bethune-Cookman.
I know you like a book.
Yeah.
That's right, man. We've been knowing each other a very long time.
Right. Silly me. But I know Bethune-Cookman.
So Howard and everybody else, don't take offense. He was going down the list. He just got stopped.
I was going down the list. They just didn't give me the opportunity to get to you.
But I know a lot of people are you know, saying that Bethune-Cookman could be that team. And in talking to some of the athletes at the media day, they feel like that they can be that team as well. So how do you regard them specifically?
You know, they're always a very athletic team, and a team with a lot of speed, and they play hard. You know, so they always have a chance. And they have a quarterback. And if you have a quarterback and you have – some decent receivers, which they have, and a running back that can, you know, take it the distance. It's always a threat. It's always a threat to be a good football team. But you have to play the game. And we look forward to that day. And one of the beauties of it, they come here.
Yeah.
Versus us going there.
Yeah, but you know, your description of them sounded a lot like A&T. You know, the quarterback, the running back, can run, receiver.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk about, you know, when we were talking about the
well,
Aggies,
listen,
Bell. We didn't talk about Elijah Bell.
Yeah, well, listen, now the way I see the Aggies is if I'm going to start, I'm going to start with defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my other teams, I start with offense. You know, here we hang our head on defense, and it's my philosophy. If they don't score, it's difficult to lose.
Right.
It's very difficult to lose. Now, you can tie, but if they don't score, it's very hard to lose. So.
Well, you talked about getting back to the Celebration Bowl. What will it take for you guys to do that? You know what. I know you said that you have to go undefeated and how in the conference, and how difficult a task is that? And, you know, in the spirit of full disclosure, you know, after your first two games, I declared y'all undefeated for the season. So
well,
I
tell you what,
that last year.
Yeah, it's tough. I promise you, it really is. This conference compatibility has is. Changed drastically, you know, since we got here in 2011. And, you know, it was just one or two teams, you know, sitting at the top of the hill every year. And then now it's several teams that's capable and many, you know, that's climbing, you know, up that mountain to sit on the throne. So I think it's going to be very interesting, this, you know, to say the least. To see how it unfolds. But I think we are up for the challenge.
So how do you account for that change? I mean, what was the impetus for that, and how did that come about, to make it more competitive? Was it, you know, better coaching, better recruiting?
I think that's where it started. I really do. You know, coming from the SWAC, you know, we were at Grambling before coming here, and we felt, you know, we had better athletes over there. But the coaching here was, you know, a little better and a lot more challenging, and teams were better prepared, and it was some, you know, teams over in the SWAC that you knew were not going to compete for a championship, where it's a little different over here. You have several that's capable, you know, of being the champion each year, and I contribute that to the coaching. I think coaching in this conference is pretty darn good.
Yeah, well, you know, the conference really has made a lot of great strides the past few years, and
yes,
you know, both on and off the field, you know, the things that you guys are doing, and one of the things that is going to be happening in MEAC this year is, you know, instant replay. Before, it was limited to just televised games, but this year it'll be all games. How do you feel about that?
Well, I have mixed emotions, honestly. You know, initially I was one of those guys where the officials are part of the game, and we have to trust their calls and go with their judgment, whether it's right or wrong. And then when we got the idea of having instant replay on a consistent basis, I became in favor of it more so, because now we had the opportunity to get it right. It's just it's how it's used was going to determine whether or not I like it or not. One thing I don't want it to do is slow up the pace of the game. You know, you can change, you know, if you have, you know, big mo on your side and you going, and then boom, all of a sudden you got a 3-5 minute, you know, break in the action. That's not good.
Right.
And see, now that part of it, you know, I just don't care for.
Can you practice for that? Do you do drills or anything like that where, you know, you do have replay out there, practices in the scrimmage or something like that where something's close and you want to acclimate the kids to situations like that during the season?
Yes, we do. But how realistic it is, you know, I really don't know. But during the scrimmages, we did have, and we'll continue to do, challenge certain calls. you know, just for the practice of it. But I don't think it was done with the intent of, you know, distorting the momentum. It was more to see that the equipment worked, and they know how to operate the equipment. That's what the focus, you know, have been here recently, you know, in using it, you know, the instant replay.
That's interesting. I guess they need to practice too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, but never thought about it from that aspect, you know. And really, you know, I was not. I don't think I still am a big fan of replay, but I certainly wasn't a fan of how it was used in the MEAC in the past. Only, you know, for televised games, because that was not. It wasn't a level playing field because. You know, if your game is televised and a play occurs that could affect the outcome and it goes against you, then there's another game that's being played and there's a controversial play and the game is not being televised, then you know, where's the equity there?
Right. And see, that was my argument.
Yeah.
That was my argument initially last year. That was my argument.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah, but you know, as long as everybody's, you know, reading from the same sheet of music, you know, that's a lot better.
Mm-hmm. I agree totally. I agree with you totally.
Now, as you being a defensive coach, are you having to really, since there is replay and calls are being challenged and that kind of thing, are you having to teach differently in terms of how guys hit offensive players?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's what you know, kind of perturb me, and you know, I think they have changed, you know, the game of football as I knew it, you know, with the physicality part of it, you know, this blindside hitting, you know, that was just a shot for us, a peel back. Or if you caught a guy coming in on a slant and you get to the ball the same time he does, you know, those were opportunities. And seeing those opportunities, you know, have just been stricken from the game totally. And, you know, I'm from old school. I'm a swipe player. Man. We were physical.
I know. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, you were a corner.
Yes.
And your job is to keep the guy from catching the ball.
Yes.
But the way the game is called now, you almost have to allow him to catch the ball.
Yes. I agree with you totally, you know. And see, that's another thing that, you know, we been able to do, and when the officials do come on campus, you know, come up with some different ideas and concepts of what they're looking for, where they're going to be positioned, and, you know, what precisely is acceptable and what's not. Where should our hands be? When can we reach in? You know, all that little stuff, you know. And then this hitting with the crown of the helmet. Now, we were always taught that you hit with your forehead, your face first. And you roll your hips. And now they're saying if you load now and explode through with your hips, that's targeting. And I don't get how, if someone running at you full speed and you stationary, if you don't roll your hips, you finna get it. That's the only line of defense, is being able to explode with your hips, you know, to you know, help with the impact. That's the only way. So that part, I just don't get. I just don't get it. And then, you know, now those defensive players, you know, he's not looking, you don't want to take the wicked shot, don't. Okay, I can live with that one. You know, you really trying to protect kids, and I'm going to live with that one. But those just straight bang-bang collisions, I think that's part of the game.
Well, it sounds like to me, you know, the people who are interpreting the rules and making the rules are people who haven't really played the game.
Yep,
they're going more on theory than practical application.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Well, thinking along those lines, does that really have to force teams
to really have depth at positions, because the off chance that the interpretation of a hit going to take a kid out for a half or that kind of thing. Do you even think along those lines where it's like lose him?
Depth would definitely help you in those situations, but normally teams know. It's always one or two kids on each team that's just physical or rowdy or will take that shot. And if you have one of those kids on the team, you better have a good backup behind him. And it's like knowing your kids. You got to know them. You got to know who will and who won't. And who may and who, you know, definitely. You don't have to worry about that kid. He ain't going to hit nobody. You know, you know what I mean? So you have a few of those, yeah, too. But those ones that will, you know, strike a blow, it make a lot of sense to have a solid backup behind that person.
But, you know, you always want to have that type of player around because, you know, those guys can, you know, can energize the team.
That's right.
Like that.
But they can change the complexity of the game. And I love them, I'm telling you. I think the game is physical. It should be played very physical. And that's just what football is.
Yeah. So true. Well, Sam, we certainly appreciate you taking the time to come in and chat with us. And, you know, we're expecting great things from you and the Aggies. And, you know, I'm sure we'll catch up with you down the road. And, like I said, just, you know, looking for another great season out with you guys.
Thank you very much, and we'll do our very best.
Thanks, Hose.
All right, thank you, Mr. Turner.
That was Sam Washington, folks, head coach of North Carolina A&T, and the team that's picked to finish the first in the MEAC this year. The only time that you see them any lower anywhere on the preseason polls is alphabetical. It's number six. So it's highly unlikely you're going to see them be sixth in the league this year. So
yeah,
it's really great to see to hear him talk about his team and to just be real about it in terms of the rules and that kind of stuff and going forward. So we thank him for joining us.
Yeah, the Aggies, they really have it going on down there in Aggie land. You know, they've won a shared, you know, the MEAC title the past 4 years, and that's quite an accomplishment. And for him to come in behind Coach Broadway and to have the kind of season that he had last year, that was phenomenal. I mean, a lot of people were going to say, well, you know, he just, you know, came in and, you know, Broadway left the table.
Took his players, Broadway's players, and did stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, you have to give him credit for, you know, whatever he did, not to mess it up, you know, because
exactly
a lot of people come in with the notion that, okay, this is my team, I got to put my stamp
change
on
everything.
It, you know. Yeah, you know, so worried about who's going to get the credit for, you know, the success, you know. And my thing is, you know, a lot of people say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I say if it ain't broke, don't break it. You know, be smart enough to
right.
think, leave well enough alone, and that's exactly what he did. And you know, I think he'll be able to sustain that, because the one thing that he has going is that while they've lost a lot of quality athletes from last year, they played a lot of people. They have you know, a lot of people who have that game experience and who are accustomed to winning. They just aren't accustomed to being in the game from the start. But I think that's a transition
right.
they will be able to make. And, so it'll be interesting to see how they make that transition. And those first three games are really going to be interesting and a key to the to
well,
the
I think that first two games, how healthy they come out of those games, because that's where you take your licks. And then, but they get a week off to heal. And then they start with the team that's picked last in the conference in Dell State. And he's very diplomatic. Of course he would be. There are no coaches out there going to talk about that they have any cakewalks, unless it's somebody like Lane Kiffin talking about Alabama or something. But most coaches pretty much a diplomatic about. They know who the weak sisters of the league are and who the strong teams are. They know what's up. He knows that they got to deal with Pham and Bethune and Central and Howard is the top challenges to the throne. So that'll be interesting to see in and of itself. Now, is Howard a conference game for them this year?
I believe it is. But
I'm starting to think. I thought I saw an asterisk by their name for some reason, and I didn't know if that was a designation for them not being.
I think all of them are conference games.
Well, the only change this year is the schedule changes, and then they lost the team.
In
Savannah State, which has gone over to the SIAC.
Yeah, long gone. But getting back to A&T and the schedule, that front-loaded schedule, the one good thing about it, though, is that you know, they're playing Duke, which is an FBS opponent, but they're not one of the card-carrying heavyweight programs, you know, like a Clemson or, you know, Miami or Florida State. So, you know, they're a little bit closer to an A&T in terms of physicality.
I agree. I keep thinking of the first two out the box, where you got Elon is a strong running team, and then Duke is an incredible passing team. I think Cutcliffe is considered the quarterback guru.
Right.
And the guy that David Jones just got drafted in the first round by the Giants.
Yeah,
and,
Daniel
you know,
Jones.
They're going to get to see Daniel Jones. They're going to see a lot of stuff the first two games, and they got Charleston Southern. Who had a pretty good run of playoffs runs until recent history, and they've been pretty strong. So they're gonna get tested early, and it seems like they schedule well. They're not playing somebody like incredibly out of their depth, whereas have a Savannah going out to play in Oklahoma or something like that.
Right. And really, that's where championships are won, believe it or not. You know, the schedule determines a lot of that, who you're playing, when you're playing, and where you're playing. They have a chance. They have a real good chance to do some things. And
well, that's all you can ask of folks to do that. Now, is this maybe a note or two around HBCUs with Prairie View? Is kind of stunned, and they just lost their athletic director. Fred Washington has stepped down immediately for personal reasons. And they, from the president, a quote I read from something earlier that Dr. Simon, she expected him to leave in January. She knew in January that he was having some personal things going on in his life. And they thought he would hang out a little bit longer, but this is a bit of a shock to PV. And they have not. Alicia Pete is the interim AD until they find a permanent one. So there's just a little bit of a rumbling there out there in Prairie View coming into this season, because that's that kind of stability at the top. Prairie View's been on pretty good run in most of their major sports, so it's probably a blow to them. To lose the guy who's been, I think, about 27 seasons, 27 years he's been at university in different capacities, so he's seen it all.
Right. And they have that, stadium there that they just constructed. And,
beautiful.
Prairie View is expected to be a contender in the West. You know, they were going pretty good last year, you know, early on, and then their running back, Dewanye Tucker, was injured and things kind of, you know, fell apart. Yeah, but they can score some points.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about Pham and maybe their challenge, but Pham got some help in a former guy who played at Auburn, and I think he was trying to go to Florida Atlantic as well, but they have an offensive lineman that's coming to the fold. There was Calvin Ashley, 6'6", 320 on the O-line.
Wow, he's big enough to go to
sounds
work.
Like a road grader.
Yeah, he's definitely a man's man. Yeah. So.
Well, he was at Auburn, transferred to Florida Atlantic, and then he wanted to go. Then he's going to family because he said he wanted to be closer to home. He's from Orlando. I don't know what the distance is between Tallahassee and Orlando and Boca Raton in Orlando, but he wanted to. It's for family reasons. He's going to go up to fam. So they seem like they picked off a really good blue chip guy there, which is good on them.
For my money, anywhere in Florida is not close from one end of the state to the other. That could be a good pickup for them. They could use some good news, some good things happen to them, you know, after getting hit with that probation and
right.
After having the stellar season
the
that they had.
Several programs hit.
Yeah. Yep. So, and, you know, Coach Willie Simmons, you know, he did an outstanding job. You know, he hit the ground running there last year. And that's the one thing about MEAC. They seem to, you know, have you know, young coaches coming in who, you know, come in and, you know, shake things up and get things done. You know, Jerry Mack did a similar job at our Central, you know, when he arrived, and then you have
right.
Simmons who has come in, and Rod Milstead that Sam kind of alluded to at Dell State got off to a rough start and finished strong. So that just makes for you know, competitive conference. And then you had, you know, Terry Sims down at Bethune-Cookman who's come in and you know, he's done well coming behind you know who I'm talking about. His name escapes me. Senior moment. But but anyway, he came in, he won the championship
later on.
Yeah, it'll come to me at 2 o'clock in the morning, but so that but those young coaches, energetic coaches, have boded well for the MEAC, and then you
uh-huh.
have someone worth watching this season at Morgan State in Tyrone Wheatley, the former University of Michigan New York Giants running back who's taken over at Morgan State.
Right.
He could be worth watching, and Morgan could be worth watching.
Well, so far he said all the right things, and I'm quite sure that the folks there have to be excited about somebody of his caliber coming onto their program. And that is one to watch coming into the season.
Brian Jenkins was a name that escaped me at Bethune-Cookman.
There you go. 2 o'clock in the morning came early.
2 o'clock. 2 o'clock came early. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's transition a little bit to the NFL. And yeah, there are a couple of storylines that are out there that I just identified. And one was Antonio Brown and his helmet controversy. And what do you think of that, Roscoe? I mean, these guys, the NFL is trying to give they give the appearance that they're looking out for the player's safety. And Antonio Brown has worn the same helmet since college until this year. So they don't certify helmets at over 10 years old under their new guidelines. And so, you know, he threatened to sit out the season if he couldn't get his helmet. And he went to an arbitrator who ruled against him. And supposedly somebody online found a loophole in the rule. And they just have to find an updated model of his helmet. And has that happened yet?
Not that I'm aware of. But first of all,
right.
How many people, raise your hand, if you thought that Antonio Brown really was going to retire over a helmet?
I don't see any hands raised. I don't see anybody, you know, not missing checks because he didn't want to put on a new helmet.
Right, right. I mean, you know, really it was much ado about nothing, really. I mean, sure. You know, you like the helmet and all, but and this just kind of smacks of promoting Hard Knocks. You know, the Raiders are going to be the featured team on Hard Knocks. The Raiders are the featured team on Hard Knocks. So, you know, you previews of coming attractions. This is a, you know, tune in and see what Antonio Brown is up to next, that kind of thing. You know, it's
well, obviously, that has worked because the first two installments of Hard Knocks have been ratings blockbusters. And I'm one person who really doesn't want to see that because I think it's scripted reality TV. I don't think folks actually act like they do there when the cameras are rolling. They've done well the first two times out the box. I missed it last night, and yesterday to watch, but or the night before. But they've done well out the box with him with this, the helmet controversy, him with not wearing the proper footwear in this cryogenic chamber, which gave him severe frostbite on his feet. I mean, it's like drama, you know, squared out there. And it seems like, yeah, I'm just wondering if Mike Tomlin's looking across at what's going on and being glad that's not his headache anymore.
And Al Davis is rolling over to his grave. Yeah, you
absolutely.
Know, I can proudly say that I have never watched 1 second of Hard Knocks. Any of them in the history of the show. I mean, come on, you know, what's that about?
Like I said, I've seen it, but I saw one, and I'll bring up America's team, the Falcons. And the Falcons coach at the time, Mike Smith, is just as easygoing and loosey-goosey as you want to be, but on Hard Knocks, he came off like Patton. And I knew right then that they don't get what they really get. It'll get the real deal when the camera's rolling. You know, there was nothing like what he normally is. So that was bizarre.
You know, the game is played on the football field. You know, so why do you need all? I mean, if you have if you're putting a good product on the field, that's enough to carry the day. You know, you don't have to come up with all this. You know.
Now, do you think Pittsburgh is going to miss A.B. in his catches?
Well,
I'm speaking to you as a person who might have watched a couple of Steelers games in his lifetime.
Well, you know, I mean, the one thing that you can say about the Steelers, when you think about the Steelers, they have always receivers. They just seem to know where to go to find receivers. You know, going back to Stallworth and Swan, and then they had, you know, Theo Bell behind him and Dave Smith, you know, then you come down to Lewis Lips and, you know, just the list goes, I mean, Plexico Burris, Santonio Holmes,
right.
Emmanuel Sanders, you just name the guys who have come through Pittsburgh who have played for the Steelers as receivers, and they just have. So I think that it won't be his production contribution won't be as impactful as you might think it would be missing that guy, you know, his reputation and his caliber. I think it might not rise to that level, but it won't be that big of a difference. I don't think. Unless, of course, Roethlisberger gets hurt or goes crazy or something.
Well, it's been outstanding scouting, all the names that you named, because those guys weren't all Americans or first teamers. They were from various conferences, various levels of division of NCAA football. Yet the Steelers, their scouting department found great guys.
Right.
And so it's hats off to them, which is probably why they felt that they could suffer this with the receiving core that they have there right now.
And the other thing, I think you might see them get back to running the ball a little bit more, which will kind of ease some of that. And I really think that is the big difference in the Steelers now and the Steelers of old, is that they don't run the ball like they used to, and as a result, on both sides of the ball, they're not as physical as what we have come to expect from the Steelers, that you know, the steel curtain and that whole defensive persona. And I know this is something that Coach W.C. Gordon down at Jackson State used to always harp on that when you run the ball, your whole team tends to be more physical, you know, and that the defense is more physical because that's what they get accustomed to going against even in practice. And, you know, when you become a passing team, you do some of your aggressiveness, and I can see some of that has creeped into the Steelers, that they don't dominate you and punish you defensively like they once did.
No, they pretty much rely on the offense to score big and for those guys just to hold on.
Right,
and
right.
Seems like that's been the modus operandi in recent years, which is why they rely so heavily on Ben to be great.
Right.
And as he ages, that's not those chances are going to be few and far between. With you got people like Cleveland, you know.
Yeah, Ben at this point, he is in his career. He can't be great as consistently as he has been in the past.
Right.
So you have to find
speaking of past greats. Who's the backup for him for the Steelers? I'm trying to think of who that would be. Who would be the guy ready to step in?
Well, they don't have an experienced guy. You know, Josh.
Right.
Josh Dobbs out of Tennessee.
Right.
Joshua Dobbs. Because I think they got rid of Landry Jones, and they have
they did.
Mason Rudolph. I think this is what his second year.
Yeah, I think so.
Dobbs is in his third year. So
they're a little bit green, but they get they get to sit behind and watch greatness, and learn from what Ben's doing.
But you know, for my money, you want somebody who has done it. You know, has at least, you know, thrown some passes and, you know, in anger, you know, when it mattered, you know, took some snaps when it
Absolutely.
Mattered. So you can kind of have a feel for what it's about. So, you know, that could be troublesome because, you know, Ben is going to take some hits. And he's going to hobble a little bit. So I think they do need an experienced quarterback. And generally speaking, the formula is to have your starter, then the grizzled veteran who's been around, and then the young guy in waiting. You know, that has been
right.
But more now, you know, teams are willing to go with two younger guys, which I think is, you know, but it's flirting with disaster.
True enough. But then I look at the situation here with my team, where you got a guy pulling down a couple of million a year who you know is only going to tote a clipboard all season. How is that fair? just how is that right? When you got a guy that there's not, you know, there's never a chance he's ever going to play, but he's pulling in $2 million or
well,
a million and a half a year.
But there's always a chance there's always
a
chance that he's going to play because there's always a chance that your starter is going to get hurt. And it's an insurance policy. That's what it is. And you know, and if you are serious about trying to win it all, then you want that insurance policy because what's the worst thing in the world? You're right there. You got a shot. And your quarterback goes down, and you have nobody behind him.
Well, that's the way I look at that whole division where they are. You got nobody behind Jameis, nobody behind Cam, but you do have somebody behind Breeze with that jack of all trades dude, number 7. I can't think of his name now. Who is a quarterback, running back, receiver?
Is it Peyton Hillis?
Hillis.
Hillis, yeah.
Yeah. So you know that there,
but even he's not. I wouldn't even count him because that's a gimmick. That's a gimmick. You know, you can play him in spots, but if Breeze were to go down for, you know, 2 or 3 games, that wouldn't work. So is Bridgewater still there?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about Bridgewater.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so they do have an insurance policy. You know, somebody who has played and won some games.
Now, there is one person that's sitting out there that still doesn't have a job, who has a massive afro, and likes to take a knee on occasion, Mr. Kaepernick. And I don't know, having been out the game for a couple of seasons, if he would be the answer to somebody, should a quarterback go down? And, you know, because the NFL hasn't really been big on social justice until the last couple of days, where we saw where Jay-Z is going to be helping out the NFL on in some capacity as relative to social justice. I thought that was a real interesting thing. Does that mean that there, even is that going to be the ultimate, the long play, that Jay-Z becomes an owner in the league? Well, how does this all work?
Well, even more interesting than that was your president's comments that, you know, he felt that Kaepernick should, in essence, you know, if he proved himself worthy, get the opportunity, blah, blah, blah. So what's that about?
Proves himself worthy?
You know, that he should get the opportunity and he should be on the team. You know, if he can make the team, he should be on the team. Essentially, that's what he's saying, which is a far different cry from, you know, a couple of years ago and what he was saying.
Well, this dude, he took a team to the Super Bowl, so I don't think how much worthy that is. I mean, granted, you know, so did Trent Dilfer and some other cats out there have taken teams to the Super Bowl. But Cap had a little bit more to do with it than some of those other guys that were playing ball. So it's interesting to see that. And, again, like I said, I was reading something into it where your team in New England, I'm going to go there again. Just a long story short, the average salary for Brady is coming out to be $28.3 million. And that seems like it's a jab at my birds who are down 20, who were up 28-3 in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. But we move on to that, to the NBA.
And please do. Let's please.
The schedules come out. I guess some interesting games. Christmas Day is going to be a really big day. You're going to see all the stars just about on Christmas Day. You got Boston. Is that Toronto? You're going to have Milwaukee at Philadelphia, Houston at Golden State, New Orleans at Denver. So it seems like all the teams that really have real shots at winning the NBA title this year, we play it on Christmas Day. So that should be pretty interesting in and of itself, where you got everybody in action. Yeah, you get to see the new-look Celtics with Kawhi Leonard. Oh, not Leonard, but Walker. I mean, Walker. There with the Celtics. Toronto's going to be reconstituted without Kawhi Leonard. Bucks, you get Antetokounmpo there against the Sixers, who have now Al Horford. You got Houston with Westbrook trying to blend in with Harden again, you know, back to reunited from the Oklahoma City days. And you got Golden State, which is totally blown up, it seems. You got no Durant. You got no Klay for a while. You got, Boogie's gone. So it's going to be interesting to see what they look like. And you got the Pelicans with Zion Williamson against the Denver Nuggets, who look like they could possibly dethrone everybody out west. Only people are missing on this thing. And I missed the game. Oh, how could I miss that? The Clippers are playing the Lakers on Christmas Day at 8 o'clock.
How many games is that?
That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games on Christmas Day.
So how many games are we realistically going to watch?
Well, let's see. The evening games more likely than anything else, because your morning, you got your morning Christmas, you got your food, you got your gifts, your argument at the dinner table. And then the nighttime is when, you know, relatives who you've upset have gone home.
You got to get that nap in at some point.
Well, the Sixers Bucks at the 2:30 game, so that's the L-tryptophan nap game.
Well, you know, and depending on how many times you go back, you know, it might be 2 or 3 naps, you know. So I mean, you know, that's just massive overkill. That's probably probably 2.5 games too many.
Well, I don't know if anybody's going to stick around for the New Orleans-Denver game. Starts at 10:30. The other two games, I think, will work. The Lakers-Clippers, the world will be watching. That game, that's the 8 o'clock game, and everybody will be on that one.
Well, I tell you what, the world minus one will be watching. I know one person that probably about the second half of the game will be watching him.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, after that kind of a day, man, you know, that's a bit much. That's a bit much.
Right.
But I mean, there are some interesting matchups. I give the NBA credit for that.
That's true. But we'll see how it all shakes out later on. We want to wrap up this evening and just thank Sam Washington for being with us. Coach, North Carolina A&T gave us great insight. We appreciate that. And we just hope to see you guys around here next time. So until next time, Roscoe, what are we going to do?
Express yourself.
You don't never be here to nobody else. All you got to do now, express yourself. Whatever you do, do it good. Whatever you do, do, love, love. Look like when you're doing what you're doing, it's what you're doing when you're doing what you look like you're doing. Express yourself.